All right, we're going to start at the bottom of Lamed Gimel Amud Bet. We're just going to repeat. We did yesterday the sugya, and we compared to it at Naskol, at the Rebbe Avil. Just go over that, and today we'll deal with the core, the meat of that sugya. So towards the bottom of Lamed Gimel Amud Bet, we said, Havod Amar L'Chavrei, my bayit b'hayaro. First, he asked his friend, what are you doing on this land? So, Amalai Minach Zavnita, I bought it from you. V'achaltei Shnei Chazaka. And I've been here for 3 years, so therefore I have a taina, I have a chazaka. It's nothing to talk about. So one age shows up, that he ate it for 3 years. So the Rabbanan thought in front of Abaye the Meimer, this is exactly like the case of Nasko de Rabbi Abba. What was the case of Nasko de Rabbi Abba? How gavro d'chotof Nasko mechavre? Person who, this individual came and grabbed some raw metal ingot from his friend. So they brought the case before Rabbi Ami. Rabbi Yotiv, Rabbi Abba Komei. And Rabbi Abba was also sitting there, right in front of Rabbi Ami. Aiti chad sa'ado, demichtof, chotfa minei. He has one witness that he had grabbed it, seized it from his friend. Amar lein, chatfi, I did take it. Vididi chatfi, but it was mine. I took it, but it was mine. So Ami, Rabbi Ami, haichi ni dainu, daini lahaidino. How are we going to paskin this case? Right, we're in a bind here because we really don't have a way to paskin the case. Now, just to take a step back, and this is what the Rashi does a nice, a good job of this, which is, let's explain the case had it been other circumstances. What are the possibilities in this case? The possibilities in this case are two Eidim show up and say that it was Chotef, that he grabbed it away from his friend. If two Eidim show up and claim that he grabbed it away from his friend, what is the din there? The din there is that he's got to pay it back because he's classified as a gazlan, right? Because anybody who's muhzak b'davar, when it comes to metaltalim, right? Kol davar shetachat yodo shel adam, anything that's in the possession of a person, we assume that it belongs, he's muhzak b'davar, it belongs to him, it's shelo. So over here, since this individual's holding the item, and he went and grabbed it away, right? Leaving aside whether he thinks it's his or doesn't think it's his, the mere fact that he grabbed it, he stole it out of the hands of another individual, he's a gazlan and he'll have to repay it. So if two Eidim show up and say that he took it over here, he will have to repay it. That's one possibility. Other possibility, there are no Eidim. If there are no Eidim here, how would we paskin the case? If there are no Eidim here, he would be believed. Why would he be believed in this case? Because he has a migo now. What's the migo? The migo is he could, right? He could have said, lo chatfi, I never took it. It was always mine. So now when he comes along and says, chatfi, lididei chatfi, we believe him because he has a migo. So if there were no Eidim whatsoever, he would believe with the migo. If there are two Eidim against him, then he'd be classified as a gazlan, and he'd have to pay it back. Problem is now, we only have one Eid. So what are we going to do here? In this case, how do we handle this this one Eid? Why? Because
one Eid and he doesn't deny it.
Right, and he doesn't deny it. He's acquiescing to the Eid's position, which is that... Right. Oh, so very good. So I forgot. That's the third possibility. The third possibility is that the one aide comes and says, you stole it, and he says, no, I didn't. If he denies what the aide does, an aide cannot be motzi mamon, aide achad cannot be motzi mamon, but he could force a shavua. And then he'll have to take a shavua to offset this aide that he says that he grabbed it, and he says he didn't. If he's machish the aide, he has to take a shavua. Problem here is that he's not machish the aide. He agrees with the aide, but he says he took his item. So he has a mixture of possibilities here, and that's what the Gemara says. Hey, chini dani dani lahaidina. What are we going to do? Lishleim. If he's going to pay, leka treis adik. Right? So we can't make him pay because there aren't two Eidim. Had there been two Eidim, in Hochanami, we would have made him pay. That's what we just said, right? But now there's only one Eid. Lishtere, what we're going to say is patur. Had there been no Eidim whatsoever, he'd be patur here. Why? Because of the migo. Ikasadhat, achad sado. Problem with letting the migo through is that there's one aid now. One aid with the doesn't allow a migo to go through. So when it says lishtabo, so now what do I take a shavua? Hamar, right, so that was the third possibility is what, that he denies what the aid says. Then he'll have to take a shavua to offset the aid. Over here he can't do that. Hamar michtav chatfa. He agrees with what the aid says. He can't take any shavua negate the aid because he's agreeing with what the aid says.
Why couldn't he take a shavua that originally belonged to him?
Okay, so Kevin Damar the Chatva like a gazlan. Right? And since he says that he was Chotefit, he's like a gazlan. So Shaul asks a question, all right, why don't we just have him take a Shavu'ah that it was his? Right? If he takes a Shavu'ah that is his, that will, you know, that should solve the problem. The problem is that he is not responding to the aid. Yes, he could take such a shvuah, but he's not responding to the eid's claim. And that's the problem with that. That's not the shvuah that he's chayav to take over here. The shvuah is chayav to vote here, to address the aid's, right? And he's not addressing the aid. He's thinking a shvuah, but something totally separate from what the aid is testifying about. So that doesn't address the chiyuv or the obligation that the aid is placing upon him. So Amar Rabbi Abba, Amar Le Rabbi Abba, Havim chuyuv b'shvuah. He's chayav in a shvuah, she'en yochol li shabbat, and he can't take a shvuah. He's chayav to take a shvuah to offset or to negate the aid. He can't take such a shvuah. Chol mechuyav b'shvuah, she'en yochol li shabbat, mishalem. If you have an aid come along and it's mechuyav you a shvuah, because of whatever reasons you're unable to take that shvuah, then you are chayav. So that would be the conclusion of the case. So in terms of Naskod Rabbi Abba, the conclusion of Naskod Rabbi Abba is when you can't take a Shavuah, you pay. Because
this is a classical case where the Rabbi instituted the Shavuah the other way.
Okay, so Shaul asks, and we actually saw it, Tosfos here addresses it a little bit, but doesn't really talk about it. In Baba Metzia, we spoke about this. Tosfos in Baba Metzia asked this question. Wait, I thought we have a din in Shavuah, and we have a din in Shavuos that when it comes to a choshed al shvuah, someone who has a problem taking a shvuah because he's choshed al shvuah, then we flip it to the other party. We flip it to the other party and we force him to take the shvuah. The other party also can't take the shvuah, then the Gemara says chazal sinai, it goes back to Sinai, and then there's a machlok des tanaim and amoraim. What does it mean? What's the status? But Shaul asks a basic question here. Why don't we flip the shvuah? Fine, he can't take the shvuah. But let's flip the shvuah onto the owner, right, who the supposed owner was mukzak in it, let him take the shvuah, right, to take care of the situation over here. How come we don't say that? How come we don't flip it? The answer that Tosfos gives in Baba Metzia is that was instituted midrabanan, that a choshed al shvuah, right, flips onto the other party is only when the problem for that individual is that he is choshed al shvuah, and because it's being choshed al shvuah, he can take no shvuot. He's unable to take any shvuah whatsoever. So what are we afraid of? What's the takana? What's the takana for? It's to protect him. Otherwise, everybody will come and make claims against him. He'll never be able to take any shvuot, and he'll always have to pay. So Chachamim protected him and said, we'll flip the shvuah. But if the inability to take the shvuah is unique to this case, it's not a general problem. It's unique to this case. And if it's unique to this case, then we say there is no flipping of the shvuah. Because here, it's a one-time effect that he won't be able to take the shvuah. In the next case, he will be able to take his shvuah, and he will be able to take care of the situation. So because of that, we don't say that we flip the shvuah to the other party.
So the verse says, we can't do that with a chutzpah, have a lake of gazlan. We don't mean that in general, we give him the status of a gazlan. We mean just because of his admission in this case.
Right. I mean that because he's admitting that he's a gazlan in this case, he can't really take the shvuah that he's obligated to take. Not that he's classified as a gazlan. We don't have two edim to classify him as a gazlan. So he won't be classified as a gazlan if he goes to another case. Right? It's just for this case, when you're choteif, a choteif is a gazlan, and then you have nothing to take a shvuah about, right? You can't take a shvuah anymore because you are agreeing that you did whatever the aid said. I agree that I'm a gazlan in this case because I was choteif, even though I say it was mine. Nevertheless, I classify it as a gazlan. Because of that, we don't flip the shvuah over here. So now, what does that have to do with our case? Our case is when the person says, my bait b'hayaro, what are you doing in my land? So he says to him, I bought it from you, and I ate it, shnei chazaka. Then one aide shows up and says, yes, he ate it for 3 years. Now, Tosfos and the Rashbam on the previous Amud deal with what's the case. So the Rashbam's first answer is that the parallel between the cases is just dimyon ba'alma. It's just like, it sounds like the same case. So that's why they brought it down. Rashbam, the second answer, and Tosfos then again say that the question here is not about the aro. It's not about the land. Everybody agrees the land goes back because he doesn't have what he needs to keep the land. What does that mean? He doesn't have a shtar. He claims that he bought it, and he doesn't have shnei chazakah because he only has one aid that's testifying that he has shnei chazakah. So he's missing the basic items of what allow him to keep the land. So according to that, the land goes back clearly. The question is about the pay rate. So Gemara wants to connect the payrot that he ate over that period of time to this case. Why? Because he has one aid that came along, and this one aid testifies to the effect that what? That he ate payrot, right, for 3 years. So now he doesn't have a migo to be believed that he ate the payrot, because we have an aid that says that he ate payrot for 3 years. But what does he say? He says, yes, I did eat the payrot, but they were my payrot. So it's exactly the same concept, which is that we have one aid testifying that you did something, and you agree with the aid and say, but it was mine that I did. Yes, I ate the peirot, but they were my peirot that I ate. But I ate. Now, in the meantime, it's just like the case of chatfi, but the case where you grabbed it, right? You weren't necessarily entitled to grab the item because you're a gazlan by grabbing it. And if you don't have any evidence, then you're a gazlan. So too over here. You don't really own the land because in the end, the land reverts back to the original owner. So you don't have, you can say, yes, I took the fruits, but they're my fruits. But where's your evidence that they were your fruits? And now you're stuck in the same position. What are you going to do? Take a shavuah. So now you're obligated to take a shavuah with regards to the peirot. What shavuah are you going to take? The aide says you ate peirot. You're not denying that, right? And on the other, you're agreeing with what the aide says. So what shavuah can you take? So again, what we think is you can't take a shavuah with regards to the peirot. You got to pay them back. Like Rav Nachman. So that would be like the case of Naskla to Rabbi Abel. So along comes Abaye in our Gemara and says, Amalei Abaye, mi domi. How can you compare these cases? Hatom sada lorei orei ka'ati. In the case of Naskla to Rabbi Abel, the aid is coming to his detriment. Ki'ate achrina badei. If we enjoin this aid with a second aid, mafkinin laminei, he would lose his money. He would be classified as a gazlan and he'd have to pay the money back. But over here, in our case, the aid is coming to say that he ate it shnei chazakah. What happens if another aid shows up over here? Atachrina, if a second aid shows up now and says that he also ate shnei chazakah, then what are we going to do? Then we're going to book munya labi yadei. He's going to keep it. Meaning that the outcome of the case, if we add a second aid, right, is much different in the two instances, which proves to us that the edim are coming. Now, the way that Rashba formulates this, it means that the aid in the case of Naskat Rabbi Abba come clearly to say that chakfi, that he stole it. Right? And then the second aid is saying the same thing, that he stole it. So the one aid is coming to his detriment. In the case of the Aro, where he comes, the aid's coming to testify on his behalf that he ate it for 3 years. He's trying to help him establish a chazakah. And then when a second aid comes, then that would make it into a full-fledged chazakah and he could keep it. The only reason he's not getting it is because the second aid hasn't showed up. But the first aid is not coming to his detriment. He's really coming to support his position, which is that he had shnei chazakah. I think you could have formulated it that both of them are to his detriment. In both cases, the first aid is to his detriment. Because even the first aid now comes, makes it problematic for him to keep the peirot. Had no edim showed up, he would have been able to keep the peirot because he could have said that I ate my own peirot, like we said yesterday, right? The only time that you're locked in is when there is an aid to the effect that you ate the peirot. If there's no aid, you have amigo that you can be believed that lo achle, therefore you can be believed that you ate your own peirot and you can keep the peirot. So the problem that the aid presents for him right now is that there's an aid that he ate there, which is to his detriment. Now, why does it matter? What's the difference? The difference is that when a second aid shows up, what happens? In the case of Naskla to Rabbi Abba, if the second aid shows up, then the aid remains a negative aid. What happens in the case of our case is that when the second aid shows up, he actually makes the first aid into a positive aid. One of those two ways you can formulate it. Either way, the cases are not comparable because of that problem. The structure of you against this aid, or you having to take a shvu'ah to negate this aid, are very different. In the case of Naskla Rabbi Abba, it's because the aid is causing you a problem. In our case, the aid is either coming to help you, really, or with its hitzdarfut of another aid, he would really be to your benefit, and therefore your shvu'ah is not really to offset the aid. Right? Your shvu'ah, or if you have to take a shvu'ah here, is really because you want to uphold your position, which the aid is trying to do anyway for you. So he says, that ella idamyo, if you want to compare the case of Rabbi Abba to a case in our situation, our Gemara, had Rabbi Abba l'chad sada u'l'tarte shanei u'l'peire. If you want to compare it to Rabbi Abba, it's the exact, you want to have a case like that? Have a case where a person says, my bayit b'hayara, what are you doing in my land? He says, I bought it from you, and I ate it shnei chazakah. And he brings an aid. One aid shows up and says, ate it for 2 years. And now, if you ate it for 2 years, now first of all, the ara we know goes back for sure. There's nothing to talk about, because he doesn't have evidence to give it back. He doesn't have a shtar. He doesn't have shnei chazakah. He has nothing, so he can't keep the property. In regards to the peirot, now he has one aid that says he ate it for 2 years. This aid isn't to his benefit anymore. The fact that he ate it for 2 years is all to his detriment, this aid. The aid is saying that he ate it, which prevents him from having amigo. And number two, he's saying you ate 2 years and not 3 years. 2 years and not 3 years is to his detriment. That'll be similar to the case of Naskla to Rabbi Abba. And in that case, he can't take the shvuah because he says, yes, I did eat the fruits. He's acquiescing to what the aid says. I did eat the fruits, but they were my fruits. So there he can't take an aid, there he can't take it, and he will have to, right? He'll have to take a shvuah in that case, which is enu yacholi shavah. He's unable to take the shvuah. And if he's unable to take the shvuah, right, then he must pay the, he must pay up over here. So that 180 is causing him all the problems. Because even Rav Nachman agreed yesterday, when we say hadar ara, hadar peri, that the land goes back in the peruk, back, that's only, right, when there is edim that he ate the peruk. If there are no edim that he ate the peruk, then he has a migo and he's believed. So this 180 that says 2 years causes him to be chayav in the peruk, and is to his detriment because it's only for 2 years. And the second aid came and said he was only there for 2 years, for sure he wouldn't be able to keep it. So it's not to his benefit, and that will be comparable to the case of Naskot Rabbi Abel. Now, the large...
What's the bottom line in the first case?
The Gemara says you can't compare it. We don't... Gemara doesn't bring a conclusion to what the... What the answer of the first case would be. That the Gemara doesn't discuss. The Gemara just says that you can't necessarily draw a conclusion from Naskot Rabbi Abba to this case. Now, based on that, the Rashbam, it's a Rashbam on the top of the next Amud, there's a massive Rashbam there. You see there here is a massive Tosfos over here. They're dealing a little bit with the problem, which is that Abaye, the fact that the Talmidei Abaye come and say, let's compare this case to Naskot Rabbi Abba. And Abaye even agrees in the end that there is a case that's comparable. That means that everybody agrees that the halacha is like Rabbi Abba. What does that mean? The halacha is like Rabbi Abba. That means that if you have a shvua, she'ene yachol shava, person is chayav shvua, cannot take the shvua, you have to pay. The problem is that the Gemara in Shvot has Rabbi Shmuel, who seem to indicate otherwise. Seem to indicate that you do, in a case where there is an inability to take a shvua, that you're actually, right, not chayav in that case. We protect the Yitomim. It's a case of Yitomim. And we protect the Yitomim over there. Even though they can't take the Shavua, we protect the Yitomim. And we don't say that he's Chayav L'Shalim.
So now...
Ah, very good. So that's exactly the answer. And that's what everybody does. The Rashbam, the Tosfos, they all do this. They say that Rab and Shmuel agreed to Rabbi Abba's Pesach. That when it comes to a Shavua that you're Chayav to take and you can't take it, nevertheless, you have to pay. Their case was unique. It was a case of Yitomim, as Shaul just pointed out, and that's a great answer. It's a case of Yitomim, and there the Chachamim went out of their way to protect the Yitomim. And in protecting the Yitomim, they didn't make them Chayav L'Shalem in that instance. They didn't obligate them to pay. So they both say, the Rashbam and the Tosafot here both say that this statement of Rav and Shmuel and the Gemara and Shmuel is unique to their position over there. And because it's unique to their position over there, that does not upend or offset or disagree with the position of Rabbi Abba, and therefore we paskin like Rabbi Abba. So that the Hilchos is Rabbi Abba. You can see that Tosa says it, and both the, if you look at Tosa says, I'll just read it to you, it's going to be hard to find inside, but he says, V'alocha, right, he says, the Alocha is like Rav Nachman, B'shneim chashudim, which we didn't address at all, which is the halacha is like Rav Nachman when both of them are chashud, which is that they are shecholkim over there. Uka Rabbi Abba b'naska, that's what our case over here, that Rabbi Abba, where you can't take the shvua, you have to be mishalim. B'davka b'yutomim, maskinan d'avad k'rabu shmo, like Shaul said, just the pasak of Rabbi Shmo implies that we go like them, or we allow you to pass them like them when it comes to Yitomim. Because over there, the Gemara has a machlokas between them and Rabbi Elazar, and the Gemara says, the Abed Gemara Avid, the Abed Gemara Avid. If it's the Avid, you can do like either opinion, Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Elazar. But that's unique to the case of Yitomim. Not to this case here, it doesn't affect the Pesach of Rabbi Abba over here. These are what these big Tosfos and Rashbams are dealing with. I just wanted to give you a flavor of what they're, it's more has to do with the Gemara and Shavuos than the Gemara over here. But you should just know why there's so little Gemara on the daf here because of this, dealing with these issues. Alright, now next case in the Gemara. How Arba? To have a Minse Allah Beitre. Is a boat that two people are disagreeing about, they're arguing about. Hayamar didehi. One says it's mine. Hayamar didehi. The other says it's mine. Ati chad minayu lebeinina. One of them comes to the basin and says, Amar tifsua. Seize the boat on my behalf. Seize the boat. Admaitina sade. Didehi. Till I can bring witnesses that it's mine. I want you in the interim to hold the boat in escrow so this guy doesn't go ahead and sell it or grab it and take it. Right, Tafsinan, or lo Tafsinan? Does Beis Din listen to him and seize the boat? Or do they not seize the boat? What's the halacha? So Ravuna Amar Tafsinan. Ravuna says that we do. Beis Din acts on his behalf and we do seize the boat. Rav Yehuda Amar lo Tafsinan. Rav Yehuda says we do not seize the boat on his behalf. Now, I'm just going to read the next part of the Gemara because the Rashbam says that the opinions of Ravuna and Rav Yehuda are actually talui on the opinions of the next set of Amoraim. So we'll read through that, then we'll come back to explain these. Tosos severs the two machlokot, that they can stand alone. Azal, v'lo ashkach sadeh. In the end, he didn't find any edim. He said, I would bring Edim. In the end, he doesn't show up with the Edim. Amar lahu, afkua. He says, all right, you, Beis Din, you seized the property. Now, you should reinstate the property to where it was, its previous state. What was that? The previous state was that it was sitting out in Hefker. So redo that. V'chol de'olim govar. And whoever is stronger will take it. We'll have to address that. V'chol de'olim govar. It's the next Gemara. I'll address that when we get to the next case. Mafkinan or lo mafkinan? Does Beis Din listen? Does Beis Din, right, reinstate the property to its previous state? Or does Beis Din hold on to the property and keep it? Why? So Rabbi Yehuda Amar, lo mafkinan. Rabbi Yehuda says, we do not reinstate the property. Beis Din, once it sees the property, has to see the case through to its end. I mean, once Beis Din has seized the property, there's an obligation on Beis Din to ensure that the property gets to its rightful owner. And if it's not, if we're not going to ensure that it's going to get to its rightful owner, we may not reinstate the property and let it go and just say, oh, whoever grabs it, grabs it.
Even though the review did said in the first case that there should have been.
So that's the Rashbam connects the two of his opinions. We'll see that. Veichi and Rav Papa Amar Mafkinon. Rav Papa says we do reinstate the property. We do throw the property back out and allow them to, it's a jump ball. And once we throw the property out. So Shaul asks, according to Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda says, Lo tafsinan, Rabbi Yehuda says, we're not toface. If Beis Din's never toface, how can you be have a question of mafkina? So the Rashbam says that the two cases, the two are connected. So you can most obviously see that in Rabbi Yehuda's situation. Rabbi Yehuda says that Beis Din does not, once they've seized the property, they do not reinstate it. They do not allow it to go back out. So Rabbi Yehuda says, you know why we lo tafsinan? You know why Beis Din's not toface? Because they're not mafkia. The reason that we don't allow Beis Din to grab it is because what happens to this guy is a charlatan. This guy is a fake. He's saying, yeah, I have Edim. He just shows up. He says, yeah, it's my boat. I have Edim. So now all of a sudden Beis Din seizes it. Now Beis Din is not going to reinstate the boat. Now he's caused a problem that the other guy is not going to get his property back. He's actually caused a loss for this other individual and he wasn't right. He didn't have any right to do such. Because Beis Din won't, in the end, reinstate the property or disengage from the property, then we're not, right, without any proper evidence, then we're not, and here it's clear that neither has evidence, otherwise the case wouldn't have reached this, right, neither has evidence, so we say, don't seize the property because you're not going to disengage from the property. That's Rabbi Yehuda's position. Now, what Rabbi Yehuda says, if b'dieved they were toface, then lo mafkina, and we do not disengage from the property. Now, the other opinion is Ravuna. Ravuna says tafsinan. Why does Rav Huna say that we do allow Beis Din to seize the property? Because he holds like Rav Papa, who says that Beis Din does disengage from the property in the future. So since Beis Din will disengage, we allow Beis Din to seize it, because it'll all be temporary. He seizes it temporarily, and then if we find out that this guy is a charlatan, this guy doesn't have Edim, we'll just reinstate the property, we'll disengage from the property, and we'll be back to square one, and that'll be fine. So that's the Rashbam connects the two, and says that each machloka, this is connected. Now, you could have obviously said that that's not the case. And that's what Tosas says. Tosas says, I don't know why the Rashbam does this. He actually quotes Perish HaKuntris. I don't know if Tosas was reading the Rashbam thinking that Perish HaKuntris, or he said that he actually had a Madura Kamo of Rashi, Masechet Baba Batra, that he was reading, and Rashi, and the Rashbam is following position of Rashi, that that says that the two are independent. Say that the two are connected, and Tosa says no, and the Reis says no, they don't have to be connected. Rav Huna says tafsinan. Rav Huna says that we allow Beis Din to seize the property in this case, irrespective of whether Beis Din will disengage afterwards or not. Why? The question here is whether when a person comes along and says, I have Edim to bring, do we believe him? Do we believe him to the detriment of the other party? Because there's a detriment to the other party. Rav Huna says yes, give the other guy a chance to bring his Edim. We'll see. Rav Yehuda says no. He says, what right do you have to come all of a sudden and disadvantage the other guy? In the meantime, he could have been b'chol de'olim govar. While Beis Din's holding on to it, if you left the property out there, maybe the rightful owner would have come and grabbed the property. And he would have taken the property. So because of that, we don't want Beis Din getting involved. We don't want Beis Din getting involved unless they know that there's going to be evidence that will help them decide the case. If there's going to be no evidence, or the guy just claims he has evidence, we don't want Beis Din getting involved till we know that they can actually adjudicate the case. If they can't adjudicate the case, don't get involved. That's the position of Rabbi Yehuda, independent of Mafkinan, no Mafkinan. It's just a simple question. Toface, low toface, when does Beis Din get involved? According to Rabbi Yehuda, Beis Din shouldn't get involved until they know they can adjudicate. Rav Huna says, if there's a chance they can adjudicate, get involved. All right, maybe later you have to disengage, maybe not disengage. We don't look at that. That's not the question at hand. The question at hand is, should Beis Din be involved? Right, so that's the machlokos between the Rashba and the Tosfos, how to read these two machlokot over here. Now, the Gemara here discusses something called b'chol da'olim gavir. That whoever, when we don't have any evidence, b'chol da'olim, whoever has the better position takes it. What does that mean? So now we're going to see the next case in the Gemara, and I'll just read the case, and then the Gemara will continue into tomorrow, but we'll read the case. So Zilmer, the next case is, I skipped the one line of the Gemara. So Hilchasa lo tafsinan. The loch is that we are not, Bezin does not seize it. Ve'echot tafas lo mafkinen. And if they do seize it, they don't disengage or they don't reinstate the property. So going to the Rashbam, that has to be. If the loch is, right, that lo mafkinen, then obviously the loch is also that lo tafsinan. If we're not going to disengage, right, or reinstate the property, then certainly we're not going to seize the property, and that's consistent with his position. According to Tosfos, it's two independent piskei halacha. The halacha is lo tafsinan, and we don't seize it. That's because Beis Din shouldn't be engaged when there's nothing to adjudicate. Separately, if they are tofes, lo mafkinan, right, then we don't, mafkia, we don't disengage from the property once they have seized the property. And now,
in the case, if both of them request that it be seized,
then it's fine.
So they never agree to it.
Everybody agrees that you can be seized.
Can they both agree beforehand, seize it for 30 days to give us a chance to prove it, and if not, release it, and then that would be okay?
I think it seems. If they, then it's more like arbitration of sorts, meaning that they're accepting that Beis Din will act in this manner, and I think in that case, Rashbam says it clearly by the case of seizure, if they both agree, that they can seize it.
They can seize it, right.
If he doesn't give the opposite side, which is that if you can mafkia, but I think the same should be true, which is, that Beis Din, unless you really believe that there's now an obligation, the Rashbam is a strong lashon, that once Beis Din has taken a piece of property, they may not disengage from the property until they've adjudicated to its end. And if you say that Beis Din's obligating themselves once they've seized the property to adjudicate, maybe you can. But if the reason Beis Din seized it was because of the agreement of the two parties, maybe they're not acting in a sense as a Beis Din that's coming to adjudicate, but really as an arbitrator between the two parties at this point in time. Maybe then you could be mafkia. It's a good question. Right now, next case is Zeomar Shabotai, Bezeomar Shabotai. So it's time, we're talking about boat, land, whatever it is. Each one says it belonged to my family, belonged to my forefathers, and I'm the Yoresh. It's mine now. So Amar Rava Nachman, Rav Nachman says, how do we solve a problem like this? Kol da'olim gavar. No evidence to either side. We don't know what to do. Kol da'olim gavar. What does it mean, the kol da'olim gavar? So the Rashbam says, what does it mean, kol da'olim gavar? Ben b'rayot, ben b'koach. Whether through evidence, meaning a circumstantial evidence of sorts, or ben b'koach, or by force. Meaning that either way, right, we are going to say, by good means, he'll get to this property, and it'll work out. Now, the two possibilities, how to look at the Chol D'Olim Gavar. The Chol D'Olim Gavar, the Rosh, in the beginning of Metziah says, you know what the Chol D'Olim Gavar does? Chol D'Olim Gavar is that we have a belief that the person who rightfully owns the property, in the end, will end up with the property. Why? Because he will exert himself more to get to keep the property. He's willing to take a risk to keep the property because in the end he knows it's really his. So he'll, whether it's by force, whether it's by riot, whether it's by whatever activity he does to grab it or investment he makes to keep the property, he will do it because in the end he knows he'll keep the property. The other party, who is the liar over here or the faker, right, in this case, the effort or exertion that he makes to keep the property, right, might go to waste because in the end, really, they might show up and say that he don't own it. Or some evidence might show up that he doesn't have the rights to this property. He's going to lose whatever effort or investment he makes into it. So therefore, the belief is that the rightful owner will end up with the property. The rightful owner went up. That Chol D'Olim Gavar is a way to b'machri in the case, meaning that the facts on the ground will determine. And this will be a hachra that it really belongs to this individual. And you can see this in the Lashon HaRashbam here. I'll read you just this is from the previous Gemara about Tafsina. The Rashbam says, listen to this. Right? If you are tofes, according, and where we're not going to reinstate it, where you're not going to, Beis Din's not going to disengage, according to the Rashbam, you're going to cause a loss to the other party. Why? The owner of the boat is going to lose. If we left it, Dilma havi olim vigavar. Maybe he would have been stronger min gover. Balasfina benimsa zoche bishelo. He'll be zoche in his own property. So what does bishelo mean? I mean, it's not muchach in the Rashbam, but it sounds from the lashon Rashbam that the Rashbam believes that chol da'olim gavar means in the end bishelo. He's going to get his. It's his. It's his property in the end. And that's similar to what the Rosh says in the Gemara and the beginning of Bava Metzia. The other possibility of Chol D'Olim Gavar is actually that it's a problem for Beis Din. Kol Dalam Govar is just a way, it's a procedural issue, which is that Beis Din does not get involved in cases where they have nothing to do. I mean that for Beis Din to get involved is meaningless in this case. So what Beis Din does, the way Beis Din acts in this case is disengage. So once you've disengaged, then what's the procedural manner for determining the facts? It's going to be Kol Dalam Govar. It's not that that determines the truth in the end. That doesn't mean it belongs to him. It's just a methodology for determination in the interim for who the property belongs to. Because Beis Din will disengage in this case. If Beis Din disengages, right, then we will say, okay, Kol Dalam Govar, and that's where the case will be decided until there's evidence, until we have. It doesn't determine, say that it's really his. It just says, in the interim, this is the way we decide the case, the Kol Dalam Govar. Now, in that position, if you believe the Kol Dalam Govar is really related to Beis Din disengaging, that means that it has to be a case where Beis Din shouldn't have to engage, meaning that there's no Drura de Mamona. If there is a Drura de Mamona, which forces Beis Din to engage, then we can't say Kol Dalam Govar anymore, because then Beis Din has to be in the case, because there's something to do. Why is there a Drura de Mamona? We had a machlok, because we know this about Metzia, Rashi, and tells us what Drura de Mamona is. Rashi says it's Hefsei Momo, that there's going to be a loss to one of the parties. The other possibility is that Tosa says Drura de Mamona is that the suffix exists even without the case being brought to Beis Din. The suffix exists even prior to the claimants bringing their case to Beis Din. So in that case, Beis Din will have to get involved, because now there is something to adjudicate, or there's a reason for Beis Din to be involved. But if there's no reason for Beis Din to be involved, we say disengage. And Kol Dalam Govar, the procedure for determination now is Kol Dalam Govar, even though that won't determine who really owns it. But in the meantime, it will allow the case to be settled in that sense. So now, it's almost similar to a case we've had in Balmetzia, which is Shodah the Dining. Right, that it's up to the Dayanim in that case. It's Machlok, because there Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam also what that means, and Rashi tells us. Rashi believes Shodah the Dining is that we look at the circumstantial evidence in the case. We look at which side it should go to. And the Tosafot says, no, show the Dayan is whoever the Dayan likes, he can give it to. Whoever he likes better, whatever, it's up to him, you know, that case. So it's similar over here. So Adalim Gavar is not a determination in terms of who really owns it. It's just a procedural method for determination, just like we showed the Dayan according to Tosafot. It's just a way. The Dayan, there's no way to determine the case. The Dayan just give it to whoever they feel like. So it's over here. Kol Dalam Govar, that's what happens in this case, because Beis Din can't be involved. All right, so that will explain, again, before, what it meant. The Kol Dalam Govar is, if you think it's a Breira, meaning that it actually determines who owns it, then you could really say there's a huge disadvantage when Beis Din comes and sees the property, because the rightful owner will not get it. If it's simply procedural...
If you say
Lo Mafkina, right. If, on the other hand, you say that it's procedural, you could argue that it's still to the detriment, because he could have got the property. But in that case, it's not necessarily that the rightful owner ends up with the property. So Kol Dalam Govar is not necessarily the best outcome. So you could explain the opinions before about whether it's the Rashbam or Tosos or the opinions of the Amoraim based on that, of how they what they think Kol Dalam Govar does. Right? If you believe that Kol Dalam Govar really actually determines who owns it, then you'd rather have Beis Din not be involved and the Kol Dalam Govar. On the other hand, if you simply think that Kol Dalam Govar is a procedural method, then let Beis Din be involved, because the worst scenario is that Beis Din's involved and we can't adjudicate it and it gets stuck in Beis Din. But the other way is that it's just a procedural way to understand it. It doesn't mean that the rightful owner is going to get it. So your preference for which way Beis Din acts might be based on what you think Kol Dalam Govar is. Alright, that we're going to stop the Gemara here. I was just point out that there's one problem that the Rishonim deal with over here, and that's the Gemara Bava Metzia of Shnei Mochsim. Well, we have a case in Shnei Mochsim, right? One guy is holding half the talus, the other guy is holding the other half the talus. What do we do in that case? Each one takes a shvua, shedet ein chetzi shelo, no less than a half is his, and then they split the talus. Okay, so what happens over here? Wait, we have two guys arguing about a boat. One guy says it's my boat, the other guy says it's my boat. How come the conclusion of the Gemara is not like the Gemara in Bava Metzia?
Neither one of them is actually holding it.
All right, so that's the Rashbam. Very good. Excellent. That's, the Rashbam brings that as a solution. Tosus brings that as a solution also. That the Rabbeinu, according to the Tosus brings a reasoning or an explanation similar to that, which is that's the difference. Achiza is the difference. In the case of the Talit, each party is actually physically holding the Talit. So there, over there, we could say that it's a possibility that they both came simultaneously and they grabbed onto the talus. They're holding it, so we split the talus because they're both muchsak b'davar. If they're muchsak b'davar, they both have the same evidence. Where by the boat, neither party is really muchzak in the boat, meaning that they're both, in a sense, it's in a hefker. It's like they're both disengaged from the boat because...
You also touched on the other, another point, which is that by the Talos, it's possible that they really both have a legitimate claim to it, whereas in the boat, of course, one of them or the other. There's no chance that, it's not like a lost object that both of them want to,
one said
that they
claimed
first.
Very good, very, very good. So Rabbeinu Tam and the Rashi explain like the first, which is that it's an issue of achiza. It has to do with physical contact. If you're in physical contact with the object, then it's the din of shnei mochsim. If you're not in physical contact with the object, then there's no shnei mochsim, and that's why our Gemara has a different psak over here. And that's called Olam Gavar. That the Riva tries to explain, as the Shaul pointed out, that when I was explaining it, I actually brought in another idea, which is that by the Talos, there's a possibility that both came simultaneously, whereas by the boat, there's no real possibility that they both owned the boat, they both grabbed it simultaneously. Again, in Mitzias, I think maybe there is a way. A boat can be, to be muksak in a boat, there are multiple ways to be muksak in a boat. But Riva suggests that the solution to the problem, the difference between the cases, over there, they could have come simultaneously and grabbed it. Over here, they can't. Now, the problem with that is that that's only the opinion of Rabbi Meir. It's only a minority opinion in the Gemara Shnei Mochsim, and now you're trying to apply his opinion to the broader perspective of the cases. So then the Rifagi tries to give a different answer. The main answer is what the difference that Rashbam and the Reino Tam point out, which is that Achiza, grabbing the object, makes it Shnei Mochsim. And our case of how our brother, I'm mitzvah, where they're fighting, is that nobody's achuz b'et, and therefore there's going to be chod alim gavar, we deal with tfisa and machkinan, versus the case of Shai Mochsim, where we're going to split it based on the Shavua. Okay, we'll stop over here.